St. Mark's Basilica. Among Europe's churches, St. Mark's, with its onion domes, rich mosaics, and exotic treasures, is one of a kind. Hi, I'm Rick Steves. Thanks for joining me on a guided walk through St. Mark's Basilica. We'll marvel at medieval icons and precious objects from the era when Venice was almost as oriental as it was European. We'll see the church interior, its mosaics, and its jeweled art. And we'll end with a great view over St. Mark's Square. Allow about an hour to do justice to this audio tour, seeing a 1,000-year-old church whose ties to Byzantium and Islam make it feel like a remnant of a lost world. To help us along the way, I've invited a good friend and virtual travel buddy. Welcome, Lisa.
Buongiorno.
Lisa will give us helpful directions and sightseeing tips throughout the tour.
And my first tip is to be sure you get our tour updates. Just press the icon at the lower right of your device. You'll find any updates and helpful instructions unique to this tour.
Things like closures, opening hours, and reservation requirements.
There's also tips on how to use this audio tour and even the full printed script.
Yes, so pause for just a moment right now to review our updates and special tips.
It's okay, we'll wait.
And now let's go visit the majestic
Basilica of St. Mark.
The tour begins. The exterior.
Start outside the church in the square, far enough back to take in the whole facade. Then we'll zero in on the details.
St. Mark's Basilica is a treasure chest of booty looted during Venice's glory days. The church facade shows the cosmopolitan nature of the city that came in contact with so many different cultures. You'll see Roman-style arches over the doors, Greek-style columns alongside, Byzantine-style mosaics, French Gothic pinnacles on the roofline, and, topping the church, the onion-shaped domes that hint at the Islamic world. All these plundered elements are only appropriate for a church built upon the bones of a stolen saint. Now, head for the far left door. Move in really close to get the closest possible look at the mosaic over that door. The mosaic shows a picture of the church and the theft that put Venice on the pilgrimage map. You'll see two men in the center with crooked staves entering St. Mark's. On their shoulders, they bear a coffin with a body. It's the body of St. Mark, which they've spirited away from Muslim lands. Mark looks kind of grumpy to me. Must have been a long and rough voyage. Here's the story. St. Mark was the author of one of the four Bible books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that tell the story of Jesus' life. 7 centuries after Mark's death, his holy body was in Muslim-occupied Egypt. In 828, two merchants of Venice visited there and decided to rescue the body from the so-called infidels. They hid it cleverly in a pork barrel, which was unclean to Muslims, and carried it off to Venice. The mosaic shows the merchants presenting the body not to a pope or bishop, but to Venice's secular ruler, the Doge. There's the Doge on the right, with the white fur collar, and on the left is his wife with her entourage. The acquisition of these holy relics gave instant status to the upwardly mobile city. They built a church here over Mark's bones and made him the patron saint of the city. You'll see Mark's symbol, the winged lion, all over town. The original church burned down in 976. Today's structure was begun in 1063. The mosaic, which dates from 1260, shows that the church really hasn't changed much since then. You can still see the onion domes and the famous bronze horses on the balcony. In subsequent centuries, the church was encrusted with materials looted from buildings from throughout the Venetian Empire. Their prize booty was the 4 bronze horses that adorned the balcony, stolen from Constantinople during the Fourth Crusade. It's little wonder that the architectural style of St. Mark's has been called Early Ransack.
Get in line to go inside.
Entering the church.
There's almost always a long line to get into St. Mark's. It's best to book ahead. And there are other rules.
So again, be sure to check our updates page. Just tap the lower right of your screen for the latest.
Once inside, we'll be visiting the Treasury, Golden Altarpiece, and Museum, which come with separate admissions. Inside, walkways through the church are usually roped off to deal with the relentless crowds. You just have to shuffle through on a one-way system. Do your best to follow the pace of this tour. At busy times, you may need to either pause the audio guide or skip ahead to time Rick's commentary with the flow of traffic.
Stuck in line? While you wait, ponder this. Is St. Mark's a cathedral, a church, or a basilica? In fact, it's all three. The church is also a cathedral because it's the home church of the local bishop. It's a basilica because it's been given that honorary title by the Pope. Coincidentally, it's also a basilica in the architectural sense because its basic floor plan has a central nave with flanking side aisles, like the ancient Roman public buildings called basilicas.
As the line goes inside, you enter the atrium, or entrance hall. Immediately after entering the atrium, crowd flow permitting, peel off to the right. Look overhead into the archway. Not a dome, an archway decorated with fine mosaics. Pause the audio guide and restart it once you're inside the atrium.
The Atrium Mosaics, Noah's Ark. In the arch overhead are scenes from the story of Noah's Ark. Noah and his sons are sawing logs to build the boat. Below that are three scenes of Noah putting all species of animals into the ark, two by two. Who's first in line? Lions, of course. St. Mark's famous mosaics with their picture book symbolism were easily understood in medieval times, even by illiterate masses. Today's literate masses sometimes have trouble reading them. But these 13th century works, some of the oldest and finest in the church, are quite accessible. Also in the church, you'll see the flood in full force drowning the wicked. Then Noah sends out a dove to see whether there's any dry land where he can dock. He finds it, leaves the ark with a gorgeous rainbow overhead, and offers a sacrifice of thanks to God. Hey, you're reading like a medieval peasant. Easy, huh?
Now that our medieval literacy rate has risen, rejoin the slow flow of people. Climb the seven steps, pass through the doorway, and enter the nave. If crowd flow permits, loiter somewhere just inside the door and let your eyes adjust.
The nave. The initial effect is dark and unimpressive, unless they've got the floodlights on. But as your pupils slowly unclench, you'll notice that the entire upper part of the church is decorated in brilliant mosaic. Nearly 5,000 square yards. Imagine paving a football field with contact lenses. These golden mosaics are in the Byzantine style. More on that in a bit, though many were actually designed by artists from the Italian Renaissance and later. The often overlooked lower walls are covered with marble slabs, green, yellow, purple, and rose-colored, cut to expose the grain and laid out in beautiful geometric patterns. Even the floor is mosaic, mostly geometrical designs. It rolls like the sea. As Venice is sinking and shifting, she creates these cresting waves of stone.
Find the chandelier near the entrance doorway and run your eyes up the support chain. It leads to the dome above, with one of the church's oldest and best mosaics.
The Pentecost Mosaic. Look up into the center of a golden heaven. The dove, representing the Holy Spirit, shoots out a pinwheel of spiritual lasers. The rays ignite tongues of fire on the heads of the 12 apostles below. It's the day of Pentecost, and the apostles have been miraculously given the ability to speak other languages without a Rick Steves phrasebook. You'd think they'd be amazed, but their expressions are as solemn as, well, icons. As one of the oldest mosaics in the church from around 1125, this shows Venice's strong connection with the icon style of the Byzantine Empire. The Byzantine Empire, centered in modern-day Turkey, was the eastern half of the ancient Roman Empire, the half that didn't fall in 476 AD. As Rome was decaying, the emperor Constantine moved Rome's best and brightest eastward to the city of Constantinople, modern-day Istanbul. After Rome fell, plunging Europe into a dark age, the Byzantine Empire carried on for another 1,000 years, remaining Christian, Greek-speaking, and a beacon of enlightenment to the rest of Europe. The Pentecost mosaic has distinct Byzantine icon features. There's the gold background symbolizing the sacred. The apostles all have halos, solemn faces, almond eyes, and rumpled robes. And they all face straight forward, with delicate hands raised in a blessing. This is art from a society still touchy about making so-called graven images of holy things, which the Bible prohibited. Byzantium had recently emerged from 2 centuries of iconoclasm. That was a time when statues and paintings of these graven images were broken and burned as sinful false gods. The Byzantine art style emphasizes not the literal human detail of this world, but an image-free otherworldliness that leads to contemplation of the cosmos.
Whew, heavy! As you contemplate the cosmos, shuffle along with the crowds toward the center of the church. Listen as Rick points some things out.
The Greek cross floor plan. As you approach the center, you'll notice that the church is laid out with 4 equal arms, each topped with a dome. They radiate out from the center to form a Greek cross, shaped like a big plus sign. While this church is different from your standard Western European church, it's typical of Eastern Orthodox churches, with features like the Greek cross floor plan, domes, mosaics, and icon-like images of Mary, Christ, and the saints. As your eyes adjust, the mosaics start to give off what's been called a mystical golden luminosity, the atmosphere of the Byzantine heaven. The air itself seems almost visible, like a cloud of incense. It's a subtle effect, enhanced by the changing filtered light. Let it grow on you.
When you reach the center of the church, where the altar is, look up into the dome.
The Central Dome Mosaic, the Ascension. Gape upward to the very heart of the church. Christ, having lived his miraculous life and having been crucified for man's sins, ascends into the starry sky, riding on a rainbow. He raises his right hand and blesses the universe. This isn't the dead, crucified, mortal Jesus featured in most Western churches, but a powerful, resurrected God, the ruler of all. Christ's blessing radiates out, rippling down to the ring of white-robed apostles below. They stand amid the trees of the Mount of Olives, waving goodbye as Christ ascends. Mary, with her hands up, is with the apostles, wearing blue with golden Greek crosses on each shoulder. From these saints, goodness descends, creating the virtues that ring the base of the dome between the windows. In Byzantine churches, the window-lit dome represented heaven, while the dark church below represented earth, a microcosm of the Christian universe. Christ sits facing directly out and raising his hand in a blessing. This pose might be a bit foreign to Protestants, Catholics, and secularists, but it's pretty standard in most Eastern Orthodox churches. He's shown as the Pantocrator, a Greek word meaning ruler of all. As King of the Universe, Christ wears his distinctive symbol, a halo divided with a cross. His fingers form the Greek letters chi and rho, the first two letters of Christos. Beneath the dome at the four corners are the four gospel writers. Find the names Matthew, Mark, Luca, and John. They're busy taking notes. This wisdom flows down like water from the symbolic four rivers below them. It spreads through the church's four equal arms, the four corners of the world, and in doing so, baptizes the congregation with the message of God's love. The Greek cross floor plan, which can be contained in a circle, symbolizes perfection, rather than the more common Latin cross of the crucifixion, which symbolizes man's sinfulness. The church building is a series of perfect circles within perfect squares, the cosmic order, with Christ in the center solemnly blessing us all. God's in his heaven, saints are on earth, and all's right with the world. Under the Ascension Dome, the Church as Theater. From the center of the church, look around at the church's furniture and imagine a service here. The rood screen, topped with 14 saints, separates the congregation from the high altar. This heightens the mystery of the Mass. The pulpit on the right was once reserved for the Doge, who led prayers and made important announcements from here. The church's many mosaics served as visual aids for the priest, telling the whole story of Christian existence, from Old Testament roots to Jesus' birth and death to his ascension into heaven. With all these glorious surroundings, you can imagine that the Venetian church service was a theatrical, multimedia spectacle. It combined the sound of prayers, chants, and music, elaborate costumes for the priests, props like gold candlesticks and incense, and even set design and choreography, as the priests parade through the crowd to the elaborate stage setting of the altar. Coincidentally or not, what many consider the first modern opera, also a multimedia theatrical experience, was written by St. Mark's 17th century maestro di cappella, Claudio Monteverdi.
Turn your attention to the south transept. It's the arm of the church to the right as you face the rood screen and main altar.
This wing or transept features horseshoe arches atop slender columns, giving it the exotic flavor of a mosque. The door under the rose window led directly to the Doge's living quarters in his palace. On important occasions, the Doge entered the church through here, climbed the steps of his pulpit, and addressed the people.
Now find the poorly lit mosaic on the right hand or west wall.
The Discovery of Mark Mosaic. Not a biblical scene, this mosaic depicts the miraculous event that capped the construction of the church you're standing in. It's 1094, and the church is nearly complete. See the dome shown in cutaway fashion. They're all set to rebury Mark's bones under the new altar. There's just one problem. During the decades of construction, they forgot where they stored his body. So, in the left half of the mosaic, all of Venice gathers inside the church to bow down and pray for help finding the bones. The Doge leads them. See the Latin word dux. Soon after, in the far right of the mosaic, the patriarch is inspired to look inside a hollow column. Lo and behold, he finds the relics. Everyone turns and applauds, including the women on the left side of the scene, who stream in from the upper floor galleries. Soon after this discovery, the relics were placed under the altar in a ceremony that inaugurated the current Basilica of St. Mark.
The tiny treasury is in the south transept. It requires a small admission charge. The eclectic collection of precious artifacts and religious objects is hardly a must-see sight, but it's your easiest way outside of Istanbul or Ravenna to marvel at Byzantine riches.
Now enter the treasury and turn right into the main room.
There are many artifacts here, crammed into two small rooms. Don't let Rick rush you. feel free to pause the audio guide and see things at your own pace. And be aware that, like all museums, the exhibits change and get moved around occasionally. Once inside the museum, start with the large glass case in the center of the room.
The treasury. The big central glass case is filled with Venetian treasures. Admire chalices, silver reliquaries, monstrous monstrances used for displaying the communion wafer, and icons done in gold, silver, enamels, gems, and semi-precious stones. Notice the hanging lamp with the protruding fish. The rock crystal core was made by the ancient Romans in the 4th century. 600 years later, Byzantine craftsmen framed it with metalwork. Just behind the hanging lamp, a purple bucket is carved with scenes of satyrs chasing nymphs. This epitomizes the pagan world that was fading as Christianity triumphed. Also in the case are blue and gold lapis lazuli icons of the crucifixion and of the Archangel Michael, featuring a Byzantine specialty, enamel work. We'll learn more about that craft later at the church's golden altarpiece. The various chalices, fancy cups used for the bread and wine during Mass, are made of onyx, agate, and rock crystal. Also notice the incense burner shaped like a domed church. This is marvelous handiwork, but it's even more marvelous when you remember it was done back when Western Europe was still rutting in the mud. Now turn to the wall on the right, working counterclockwise around the room. In the first three glass cases, you'll see bowls and urns made of glass or rock crystal and decorated with gold, silver, and precious stones. Spend some time enjoying these treasures. Notice how the styles blend elements from the three medieval cultures that cross-pollinated in the Eastern Mediterranean: Venetian, Byzantine, and Islamic. From its earliest days, Venice had strong ties with both Byzantium and Islam. In the 6th century, Byzantine Emperor Justinian invaded northern Italy. He briefly reunited East and West and made nearby Ravenna his regional capital. Soon, Venetian merchants were granted trading rights to Byzantine ports in the Adriatic and Eastern Mediterranean. Later, when the Muslim faith spread across the Eastern Mediterranean, the Venetians were some of the few Christians who did business with them, trading raw materials from Western Europe for luxury goods from the East. Continue counterclockwise around the room. In the middle of the wall, find the urn of Artaxerxes I. This Egyptian-made object once held the ashes of that great Persian king who ruled 2,500 years ago. The next cases hold Christian paraphernalia used for high mass: chalices, reliquaries, candlesticks, and bishop's robes. The 600-year-old ceremonial shepherd's staff is still used here today by the chief priest on holy days. Continuing to the far left corner of the room, you'll find the Ciborio di Anastasia, a small marble canopy that once arched over the Blessed Communion wafer during Mass. The object may be a gift from a woman named Anastasia. That's the name carved on it in Greek. She was a lady-in-waiting in the court of the 6th century Byzantine emperor Justinian. Christian legend has it that she was so beautiful that Justinian, a married man, pursued her amorously. Eventually, she had to dress up like a monk and flee to a desert monastery. Near the Ciborio, you'll see the first of two large golden candlesticks. Exquisite detail. Eyeing it from top to bottom, find the smiling angels at the top, the literary lion, the man with the weight on his shoulders, the row of queens, all the way down to where the decorative reliefs morph into the roots of a tree. Continuing around the room, find a photo of a Madonna. It's adorned with real jewels, gold, and enamel. Next to that, notice the granite column that extends below current floor level. You can see how the floor has risen as Venice has settled in the last 1,000 years. Continue straight ahead to the adjoining room. The glass case over the glowing alabaster altar contains elaborate golden glass reliquaries holding relics of Jesus' passion, his torture and execution. One reliquary, from 1125, shows Christ being whipped. It also holds a stone from the column he was tied to. You may scoff at the authenticity of these so-called holy relics, but of all of Europe's pieces of the true cross and supposed bits from the crown of thorns, these have at least some claim of authority. Legend has it that Christ's possessions were gathered up in the 4th century by Emperor Constantine's mother and taken to Constantinople. During the Crusade heist of 1204, Venetians brought them here. These treasures have been paraded through the city every Good Friday for 800 years. As you exit the room, to your right is a glass reliquary with the supposed bones of St. George, legendary dragon slayer. Okay, now you can scoff.
Our next two stops are the Tomb of St. Mark and the Golden Altarpiece, both located behind the main altar and requiring another small admission fee. Look for the entrance in the south transept marked Pala d'Oro, or Golden Altarpiece. If there's a line, shuffle along. When you see a stone canopy, start the next track.
The Tomb of St. Mark. Under the stone canopy sits the high altar. Inside the altar is an urn. While you can't see it, it contains the mortal remains of Mark, the gospel writer. You can look through the grate of the altar to read Corpus Divi Marci Evangeliste, or Body of the Evangelist Mark. Mark, according to sketchy documents and medieval legend, was a Christian of the first century, and he might have actually met Jesus. The Bible mentions a Mark and a John Mark who may have been this Mark. Mark traveled with fellow convert Paul, eventually settling in the Egyptian city of Alexandria and becoming that city's first Christian bishop. During his many travels, Mark supposedly docked here in the Venetian Lagoon, where he dreamed of an angel who said, "Peace to you, Mark, my evangelist." The angel promised him rest after death. After returning to Alexandria, Mark was attacked by an anti-Christian mob. They dragged his body through the streets until he died. 8 centuries later, his body lay in an Alexandrian church, about to be vandalized by Muslim fanatics. 2 Venetian traders on a business trip saved the relics and set sail for Venice. The Doge received the body, and in 828, they built the first church of St. Mark's to house it. Now, Mark rests in peace under the altar, just as that angel had promised him. Shh.
As you continue...
Shh, quietly.
As you continue past the altar, notice the marble canopy's support column with 13th century carving. On the 4th row from the bottom, is that a genie escaping from a bottle while someone tries to stuff him back in? When you reach the often crowded golden altarpiece, you'll have to jockey to get your best views. Try stepping back to take it all in while listening to Rick's description. Then, get up close to admire the details.
The Golden Altarpiece, or Pala d'Oro. The Golden Altarpiece is a stunning golden wall made of 250 blue enamels, all set in a gold frame and studded with 15 hefty rubies, 300 emeralds, 1,500 pearls, and assorted sapphires, amethysts, and topaz. The Byzantine-made enamels from around the year 1100 were part of the Venetians' plunder of Constantinople in 1204. They brought them home and had them pieced together by Byzantine craftsmen right here in Venice to make this altarpiece, specifically for St. Mark's High Altar. Now, get up close and find several details you might recognize. In the center, find Jesus as ruler of the cosmos, sitting on a golden throne with a halo of pearls and jewels. Like a good Byzantine pantocrator, he dutifully faces forward and gives his blessing while stealing a glance offstage at Mark, labeled Marcus, and the other saints. Along the bottom row, Old Testament prophets show off the Bible books they've written. With halos, solemn faces, and elaborately creased robes, they epitomize the Byzantine icon style. Follow Mark's story in the panels along the sides. In the bottom left panel, Mark meets Peter, who's seated at the gates of Rome. It was supposedly Peter who gave Mark the eyewitness account of Jesus' life that Mark then wrote down in his gospel. In the bottom right panel, you'll find the end of Mark's story. Two Venetian merchants return by ship, carrying his coffin to finally be laid to rest right here in Venice. Study one of the exquisite individual enamel scenes. Byzantium excelled in the art of cloisonné enameling. A piece of gold leaf is stamped with a design. Then it's filled in with pools of enamel paint, which are baked on. Look closely at a single saint to see the detail work. The gold background around the saint is the gold leaf medallion that gets stamped. The golden folds in the robe are the raised edges of the impression. The different colors of the robe are different colored paints in the recessed areas. Each color is baked on in a separate firing. Some saints even have pearl crowns or jewel collars pinned on. This kind of exquisite craftsmanship and the social infrastructure that made it possible made Byzantium seem like an enchanted world during Europe's dreary Middle Ages. Once you've looked at some individual scenes, back up as far as this small room will let you and just let yourself be dazzled by the whole picture. A mosaic of Byzantine splendor. This magnificent altarpiece sits on a swivel. Notice the mechanism at its base. On festival Sundays, it's swung around so the entire congregation can enjoy it.
As you exit from the Polidoro, the north transept is the arm of the church to your right. On the north wall, you'll see a large mosaic showing Jesus' family tree, literally. But we'll concentrate on the east wall of the transept with the small painting of Mary and baby Jesus.
The north transept, the Nicopia Madonna. Today's Venetians pray to a painted wooden icon of Mary and baby Jesus known as Nicopia, or Our Lady of Victory. According to legend, it was actually painted by the evangelist Luke and was once adorned with bright enameling, precious stones, and Mary's crown and gold necklace. These treasures are now on display in the church's treasury. This Madonna has been Venice's good luck charm since 1204. Venetians had joined the Fourth Crusade, hoping to rescue their fellow Christians in Byzantium from an invasion by Muslim Turks. The crusade went horribly awry. Rather than battling the Muslims, the Christians, led by the Venetians, sacked Constantinople, a fellow Christian city. The Venetians carried home an enormous haul of ill-gotten booty that brings dazzle to the church to this day. They carried off the Nicopia icon, the Palladoro enamels, the treasury's treasures, the bronze horses, which we'll see upstairs, and much of the marble that now gives this brick church its impressive veneer. Since this first conquest, the Nicopia Madonna has helped Venice to be victorious in war, to persevere through plagues, and to win those critical soccer games. Whenever Mary answers a prayer, grateful Venetians come here to give her offerings of thanks. One of those offerings is our next stop. As you begin to exit the north transept, keep an eye out for a pillar by the nave with an old rifle hanging on it. The rifle dates from 1848. During a war with Austria, a worried wife prayed to the Madonna for her husband's safe return. When he made it home in one piece, she gave his rifle to the Virgin as a thank you.
From the north transept, flow with the crowds toward the exit.
But don't leave the church just yet. We're headed for the church museum. It's just upstairs.
So, when you reach the atrium, before you spill out into the light of day, turn left and find the door and stairs leading to the San Marco Museum. The sign by the doorway says Loggia dei Cavalli Museo. This museum gives you commanding views of St. Mark's Square and the interior of the church, as well as the precious bronze horses, and exhibits on the mosaics. Climb the steep stairs and buy your ticket. Pause the audio guide while you climb the stairs and buy your ticket. Meet you upstairs inside the museum.
The San Marco Museum.
Once upstairs and with your ticket, step into the museum while Rick gives a quick overview.
The museum has a number of highlights. You get a close-up look at precious mosaics and other art treasures. There's the famed bronze horses. You get an impressive balcony view of the church's interior. And finally, a grand view of St. Mark's Square. You may have to follow a prescribed route, and the order of the sites can vary.
So start following the route.
The museum is bigger than it appears. It loops way to the far end or the altar end of the church and then back.
Start along the path and you'll soon encounter panels on the walls showing some of the church's earlier mosaics. Stroll as you listen.
Mosaic fragments. These mosaics once hung in the church. But when they became damaged or fell out of fashion, they were replaced by new and trendier mosaics. These few fragments avoided the garbage can. You'll see mosaics from the church's earliest days from around 1070. They're done in the most Byzantine style. And you'll see more recent mosaics from the 1700s. They're the ones with more realistic detail. The mosaics were made from small cubes of stone or colored glass pressed into wet clay. Artists drew the pattern on a piece of paper. They laid it on the wet clay and slowly cut the paper away as they replaced the paper pattern with the tiny cubes or tiles. The individual mosaic scene was assembled on the ground and then cemented into the walls. The art form of mosaic is old. Ancient Romans paved floors, walls, and ceilings with mosaics. When Rome fell, mosaics died out in the West, but the craft was carried on by Byzantine craftsmen. They perfected the gold background effect by baking gold leaf into tiny cubes of glass. The surfaces of the tiles are purposely cut unevenly to capture light and give off a shimmering effect. The reflecting gold mosaics help to light thick-walled, small-windowed, lantern-lit churches, like this one. It created a golden glow that symbolized the divine light of heaven.
Continuing on, you'll see other artwork and catch glimpses of the interior of the church from the north transept. Here you get a close-up view of the mosaic of Jesus' family tree called the Tree of Jesse. That's the one we saw earlier from the ground floor. Continue on to the end, where you eventually enter a large room called the Sala dei Banchetti.
The Sala dei Banchetti. This large ornate room, once the Doge's banquet hall, is filled with religious objects, tapestries, carpets that once adorned the church, vestments of Burano lace, illuminated music manuscripts, a Doge's throne, and much more. Wander through. Try reading some music. The manuscripts date from the 16th century, before the age of treble and bass clefs. You'll see a C clef along the left margin, which could slide along the staff to locate middle C. From this, you could chant notes in proper relationship to each other, according to the rhythm indicated. In the center of the hall stands the most prestigious artwork here, the Basilica's workaday altarpiece, the Palla Feriale, by Paolo Veneziano. It dates from 1345. On ordinary workdays, these 14 scenes painted on wood covered the golden Palla d'Oro. There are 7 saints above, including the crucified Christ, and 7 episodes in Mark's life below. Check out the panel with the sailboat. It tells another story of the Venetian merchant's trip home with Mark's body. A storm at sea billows their sails, ripples the flag, churns the waves, and scares the crew as the ship is heading toward the rocks. But then, Mark himself appears miraculously at the stern and calms the storm, bringing the ship and his own body safely to Venice. Paolo Veneziano proudly signed his name along the bottom, along with the names of two of his assistants, his sons, Luca and Giovanni.
We're on the home stretch. When you're ready to continue our tour, double back the way you came, through the displays of stone fragments from the church, finally arriving at the four big bronze horses. Now pause the audio guide, and we'll see you at the stable.
The Bronze Horses. Stepping lively in pairs with smiles on their faces, these four chariot horses exude energy and exuberance. These are the precious originals that for centuries stood where the copies stand today on the church facade overlooking St. Mark's Square. Art historians don't know how old they are. They could be from ancient Greece in the 4th century BC or from ancient Rome during its fall from the 4th century AD. According to carbon-14 analysis, they're probably from around 175 BC. Originally, the horses pulled a chariot, Ben-Hur style. These statues, made of bronze, were not hammered and bent into shape by metalsmiths. They were cast using the lost wax technique, where they poured molten bronze into clay molds. The bronze is high quality, 97% copper. Originally gilded, these horses still have some streaks of gold. Long gone are the ruby pupils that made their fiery eyes glisten in the sun. Megalomaniacs throughout the ages have coveted these horses, not only for their artistic value, but because they symbolize Apollo, the Greco-Roman god of the sun and of secular power. The Doge, one of the Christian world's first powerful secular leaders, spoke to his people standing between the horses when they graced the balcony atop this church's facade. Their expressive faces seemed to say, "Oh boy, Wilbur, have we done some traveling?" Legend says they were made in the time of Alexander the Great, that would be the 4th century BC, then taken by Nero to Rome, that would be in the 1st century AD. Then, in the 4th century, Constantine took them to his new capital in Constantinople to adorn the chariot race course. The Venetians then stole them from their fellow Christians during the looting of Constantinople in 1204 and brought them here to St. Mark's. What goes around comes around, and Napoleon came around and took the horses when he conquered Venice in 1797. They stood atop a triumphal arch in Paris until Napoleon's empire was blown apart and they were returned to their rightful home, St. Mark's Basilica, here in Venice. In the late 20th century, the horses were again removed from their spot when they were attacked by their most dangerous enemy yet, modern pollution. The threat of oxidation sent them galloping for cover inside the church.
Passing the horses, gallop left a few paces. And belly up to the stone balustrade for a grand view of the church's interior.
View of the church interior. If you were a woman in medieval Venice, you'd enjoy this same view, because in the Middle Ages, women were not allowed to worship on the ground floor. They climbed the same stairs you just did and found a spot along the balconies you see at your feet. The church was divided into three zones: the balcony for women, the nave for men, and the altar behind the rood screen for the priests. Back then, the rood screen, that's the fence with the 14 saints on it, separated the priest from the public. He officiated with his back to the people. From up here, you can appreciate the patterns of the mosaic floor. One of the finest in Italy, it covers the floor like a Persian carpet. From this vantage point, take a closer look at the Pentecost mosaic. It's in the first dome above you. We studied it earlier. The unique design at the very top signifies the Trinity. The throne symbolizes God, the Gospels are Christ, and the dove represents the Holy Spirit. The couples below the ring of apostles represent the people of the world. I can find Asia, Judea, and Cappadocia. Despite their different languages, on Pentecost Day, they all understood the Spirit's message.
Our visit ends outside on the balcony, overlooking St. Mark's Square.
The View of St. Mark's Square. This is one of the world's great views. The cafes along the sides, the music from the orchestras, the bustle of the crowds, the patches of pigeons. It's truly unforgettable. To the right, you get a good look at the top of Venice's clock tower with the two bronze Moors who ring the bell on the hour. To your left, sight along the Doge's palace and across the lagoon to find, in the hazy distance, the white column facade of the Church of San Giorgio Maggiore by Andrea Palladio. You'll be drawn repeatedly to these views, but also remember to enjoy a close look at the church's facade. Ramble among the statues of water-bearing slaves that serve as drain spouts. See how cleverly all the looted architectural elements blend together. The four bronze horses are copies, made in 1978. Note the date on their hoofs. Make like a doge and stand between the horses overlooking St. Mark's Square. From this very spot, under the gilded lion of St. Mark, in front of the four great evangelists who once stood atop the columns and flanked like Apollo by the four glorious horses, the doge addressed the Venetians gathered below, inspiring them to great things. Admire the commanding view of the center of this city, which for centuries was Europe's only superpower. And remember that its religious heart was this glorious church, St. Mark's Basilica. We hope you enjoyed your walk through St. Mark's Basilica. Remember, this tour was excerpted from the Rick Steves Venice Guidebook, co-authored with Gene Openshaw. If you're up for more sightseeing, we also have audio guides of St. Mark's Square, the Frari Church, and the Grand Canal. For more details on eating, sleeping, and sightseeing in Venice, refer to this year's edition of that guidebook. For more free audio tours and podcasts, and for information about our TV shows, bus tours, and travel gear, visit our website at ricksteves.com. Thanks to Gene Openshaw, the co-author of this tour. This tour was produced by Cedar House Audio Productions. Grazie.
Arrivederci.
And buon viaggio.